Good afternoon. My name is Simon, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the SNC-Lavalin's IFRS conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Jasmin, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, Simon. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. The purpose of today's call is to provide you with an overview of the main adjustment that will be made to our financial statements as a result of the transition to International Financial Reporting Standards, known as IFRS. On the call with me today are Gilles Deramy, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, and Marc-André Lacroix, Corporate Assistant Controller. To guide you through today's call, we have prepared a set of slides which you can access on our new IFRS webpage in the Investor Relations section of our website at sncelavalin.com. Following Marc-André's presentation, we will open up the lines for questions. Before I turn the call over to Gilles for a brief introduction, I would like to remind listeners that, as detailed on slide number three, certain statements made in this presentation may be forward-looking. Such comments represent management's best judgment and expectation as of today's date, are subject to certain risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, and cannot be guaranteed. The purpose of this session is to provide some information on the company's transition to IFRS. It does not contain a full analysis of all accounting options that can be chosen by the company, nor does it constitute a full analysis of accounting principles. I would now like to turn the conference over to Gilles Deramy.
Thank you, Denis. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. As you all know, we will begin reporting our results using IFRS in the first quarter of 2011. The goal of today's conference call is to help you, analysts and investors, to understand the impacts that IFRS will have on our 2011 financials. Therefore, Marc-André will give you an overview of the main changes. Since 2008, we have been providing an increasing amount of information in our quarterly and annual MD&As on the key impact on SNC-Lavalin's financials. We have now substantially completed all the steps in our IFRS implementation plan. You will see during Marc-André's presentation that IFRS do not affect SNC-Lavalin's underlying business activities or strategy, but mainly our infrastructure concession investment accounting. Before I turn the call over to Marc-André, I would like to quickly introduce him. Marc-André has been with SNC-Lavalin since 2004. He's a charter accountant and is a key member in financial disclosure and controls at SNC-Lavalin. Under his leadership, our IFRS team is successfully transitioning from Canadian GAAP to IFRS. So without further delay, let me turn the conference over to Marc-André.
Thank you, Gilles. So if you could please go to slide number four entitled Transition to IFRS. This is basically the table of contents for today's presentation. So we'll first present SNC-Lavalin's IFRS project. We'll review the IFRS adoption timeline, and we'll give you a status update on the overall transition project. We'll also present SNC-Lavalin's main choices made under IFRS accounting. We'll take a look at the equity impacts on SNC-Lavalin's opening balance sheet, and we will review in detail the main impacts on SNC-Lavalin. The two main impacts are first IFRIC Interpretation 12, entitled Service Concession Arrangements, which we will refer to as IFRIC 12. The second one is IS 31, Interest in Joint Ventures. We'll also take a look at other impacts on SNC-Lavalin's equity and at the main impacts on SNC-Lavalin's balance sheet presentation. Then, before concluding, we will present some information relating to our 2011 revenue backlog. Now turning to slide number five, entitled SNC-Lavalin's IFRS project. Overall, the IFRS is conceptually very similar to Canadian GAAP. There's an increased importance of judgment in interpreting and applying accounting rules, as well as a substantial increase in the level of disclosure. The most significant transitional impacts relate to the accounting for SNC-Lavalin's Infrastructure Concession Investment, also known as ICI. As mentioned by Gilles, there is no change to the underlying business activities or strategy. Changes relate to accounting differences only. As you are surely aware, all Canadian public companies have to adopt IFRS, so none of the adjustments, transitional elections, or policy choices described today are unique to SNC-Lavalin. These elections and policy choices will be adopted by many other Canadian companies. Turning to slide number 6 on the IFRS adoption timeline, as SNC-Lavalin has a calendar year end, its date of transition to IFRS is January 1st, 2010. However, SNC-Lavalin continues to report its financial results under Canadian GAAP in 2010, both in its interim financial statements and its annual financial statements. The first set of financial statements to be published under IFRS will be for the first quarter of 2011, and at that time, the comparative figures of 2010 will be restated to also comply with IFRS. The same concept will apply for the annual financial statements, which will be published for the first time under IFRS in 2011, and the same concept will apply to the comparative information, whereby 2010 numbers will be restated to comply with IFRS. The IFRS is to be applied retrospectively. That means as if they had always been applied by SNC-Lavalin, and that is subject to certain mandatory exceptions and optional exemptions. Now turning to slide number 7, this is the status of our IFRS transition project, and as you can see, most of the main steps are now substantially completed, and we are now working on the preparation of the company's consolidated financial statements and note disclosures in compliance with IFRS. Turning to slide number 8, this is to present you some of the main accounting choices that were made by SNC-Lavalin upon transition to IFRS. The first one is related to jointly controlled entities, and that excludes jointly controlled operations. The options under IFRS are to account for these entities using either the equity method of accounting or the proportionate consolidation method. SNC-Lavalin's choice was to select the equity method of accounting, and we will get back later in this presentation on this specific topic. In regards to property and equipment, IFRS allows for the accounting for these items using either the cost model or the revaluation model. The revaluation model means that it's recorded at fair value. SNC-Lavalin has decided to continue using the cost model for these items. And the last one is the employee benefits, whereby actuarial gains and losses from defined benefit and post-retirement benefit plans can be recognized in either net income or in other comprehensive income, and SNC-Lavalin has selected to recognize these items in other comprehensive income. Now turning to slide number 9 on the opening balance sheet for SNC-Lavalin, and more specifically the equity impact from adopting IFRS. So on the left-hand side, you can see that the Canadian GAAP, under Canadian GAAP, the equity of SNC-Lavalin at the end of December 2009 was approximately $1.4 billion. The adjustment at that date for the service concession arrangements, or IFRIC 12, was to increase equity by $37 million. The adjustment for jointly controlled entities resulted in an increase of approximately $60 million, and the reclassification of non-controlling interests, which now are presented as part of equity, resulted in an increase of $80 million. There were certain adjustments to available for sale securities, resulting in an increase in equity of approximately $15 million. And then there was also an adjustment for unamortized net actuarial losses relating to defined benefit plans and post-retirement benefit plans, resulting in a decrease of equity of approximately $11 million. There were other adjustments resulting in a decrease of approximately $3 million. And the tax impact of all these previously mentioned impacts, which amounted to $11 million, once again a decrease in equity. So on the right-hand side of the graph, you can see that the equity under IFRS as of January 1st, 2010 will be approximately $1.6 billion. That's an increase of about 12% compared to the Canadian GAAP as of the same date. As noted below the graph, these amounts have not yet been audited by SNC-Lavalin's external auditors, therefore these amounts could change. In the following slides, we will review in more detail the impacts on equity. The first one is on IFRIC 12. IFRIC 12 provides guidance on the accounting for public-to-private partnership arrangements, also known as PPP, when the grantor, which is usually the government, controls what public services the concessionaire must provide with the infrastructure being items such as roads, bridges, tunnels, prisons, hospitals, and others such as those listed on the presentation. The grantor also controls to whom the concessionaire must provide the services and at what price the concessionaire must provide those services. The grantor also controls any significant residual interest in the infrastructure at the end of the term of the arrangement, meaning that the concessionaire hands over the infrastructure asset to the grantor at the end of the term of the arrangement and is then no longer involved with the infrastructure. It should be noted that there is no equivalent standard under Canadian GAAP. Turning to slide number 11, just to see a summary of the accounting models under IFRIC 12. So there is the financial asset model, the intangible asset model, and what we can call the mixed model, which is a combination of both the financial and intangible asset model. The accounting model will be chosen depending on the allocation of the debt and risk between the government and the concessionaire, as further explained on slide number 12. So the financial asset model is used if the concessionaire does not bear debt and risk through the usage of the infrastructure, meaning that it has an unconditional right to receive cash irrespective of the usage of the infrastructure, usually availability payments. The intangible asset model is used if the concessionaire bears such demand risk, meaning that it has a right to charge fees for the usage of the infrastructure. And then both the financial asset and the intangible asset model are used, and that's also known as the mixed or the bifurcated model or method, and this is used if the concessionaire shares the demand risk with the government, meaning that the government pays the concessionaire for its services partly by a financial asset and partly by granting a right to charge users of the public service, and that both components are significant enough to be accounted for separately. On slide number 13, we mentioned that all SNC-Lavalin's ICIs that are within the scope of IFRIC 12 are accounted for under the financial asset model, which is detailed in the following slide. SNC-Lavalin's ICI within the scope of IFRIC 12 are presented in the first table on slide 13. They are namely Chinook Roads Partnership, Group of Asian, Intransit BC, MUHC, and the Okanagan Lake Concession, all of which are located in Canada. There's also TC Down, which is located in France. SNC-Lavalin's ICI that are scoped out of IFRIC 12 are also listed on slide number 13. Usually, they have been scoped out of IFRIC 12 because the government is not the owner of the infrastructure asset at the end of the contractual arrangement. For instance, for AltaLink, which is a regulated entity involved in the transmission of electricity in Alberta, Canada, the assets are not handed over to the grantor, they belong to AltaLink. In regards to Highway 47, despite the fact that the concession agreement has some of the characteristics of IFRIC 12, the grantor, which is the province of Ontario, does not have substantive control over toll prices as defined under IFRIC 12, and therefore Highway 47 was scoped out of IFRIC 12. Slide number 14 illustrates the typical structure of a concession, and this is there to put in perspective where the accounting is taking place for these type of arrangements. So in the middle of the picture, you can see the concessionaire, which is the entity that has the arrangement with the government and that is financing its activities through long-term debt. So there will be specific accounting for the concessionaire, and then there will be accounting at the contractor level, whereby SNC-Lavalin in most cases is involved in engineering, procurement, and construction activities, and in operation and maintenance activities. And then you can see that there is on the table the consolidated level. This is where there will be some elimination that will take place to clearly present the view of the consolidated aspect of the arrangement. Turning to slide number 15, you can see the accounting for by SNC-Lavalin as his role as EPC contractor and O&M provider. The accounting treatment is aligned with Canadian GAAP, so there's no change in accounting. There's only a change in terminology as under IFRS, we talk about revenue recognition by reference to the stage of completion for the EPC contractor, whereby under Canadian GAAP, we make reference to the percentage of completion method. But overall, no change on these two items. On slide number 16, we can see SNC-Lavalin as the concessionaire, and as previously mentioned, SNC-Lavalin's concessions are accounted for under the financial asset model, so this is the example that we're providing. So the concessionaire will account for its assets generated from the concession agreement as a financial asset. It will recognize EPC revenue and O&M revenue with also EPC costs and O&M costs. It will recognize the financial income generated from the financial asset, and it will incur the borrowing costs from the long-term debt. At any given point in time, the financial asset will represent the cumulative amount of revenue recognized, meaning EPC revenue, O&M revenue, and financial income by the concessionaire, minus all payments received from the grantor up to that date. The financial asset will be nil at the end of the concession term, and the infrastructure asset will then be handed over to the government. The financial income is to be calculated using an effective interest rate multiplied by the outstanding financial asset for the period. On slide number 17, we're providing, I think for better clarity, the table showing the impact of such accounting. So you can see we're presenting the consolidated level, but each column has its own entity. So the EPC and O&M portions of the activities are accounted for similar to Canadian GAAP, showing services and packages revenues and O&M revenues with the associated costs. The concessionaire in this example is a concessionaire that is fully consolidated. So as I mentioned before, the EPC and the concessionaire will recognize EPC and O&M revenues and the related costs, but in addition to that, will recognize the financial income, and it will bear the cost for the borrowing. You can see a column called eliminations. This column is there to make sure that there is no double counting of revenue, so that at the consolidated level, the revenues being recognized are clearly those that are provided for services, packages, O&M activities, as well as the financial income from the concessionaire. As noted below the table, there is no profit elimination necessary between the EPC contractor, the O&M provider, and the concessionaire, as the transactions are deemed realized through the concession agreement with the grantor. The government is the owner of the infrastructure asset, therefore the transactions are deemed realized with a third party. In slide number 18, we see a similar example, but in that case, the concessionaire is accounted under the equity method. So there is no change for the EPC and O&M activities. The concessionaire will have its own financial statements as previously shown on the previous slide, but when getting into the financial statements of SNC-Lavalin, the result will be shown as the equity pickup, which is SNC-Lavalin shares of the net results of the concessionaire. And as such, there is no need to eliminate revenues and expense as the consolidated total is in line with what the reality is. Once again, there's no profit elimination necessary between the EPC and O&M part in the concessionaire. We've provided examples on concessionaire being accounted for under the full consolidation method and equity method. There's no example using the proportionate consolidation method, as this method under IFRS will no longer be used for concessionaire, which leads us to our next topic on slide number 19 on IS 31. So SNC-Lavalin is jointly controlled operations, which are operations related to services, packages, and O&M activities, will see no change in accounting. SNC-Lavalin will continue recognizing its share of revenues and expense and its shares of assets and liabilities, as it was doing before under Canadian GAAP. The change comes with SNC-Lavalin's jointly controlled entities, and these are mainly ICI activities. As mentioned before, the equity method was chosen. There was a choice between equity method and proportionate consolidation. The choice of the equity method is to better reflect the way SNC-Lavalin views the nature of its investment. As you might recall, in the past, SNC-Lavalin used to disclose supplementary financial information, assuming that Highway 47 was accounted for under the equity method. and this was done to provide the reader with a better understanding of the accounting impact from this investment. Also, until now, Canadian GAAP, contrary to U.S. GAAP and IFRS, required the use of proportionate consolidation method for these type of entities, and SNC-Lavalin commented on various exposure drafts and related documentation to support the possibility of using the equity method as accounting for these entities. So this is seen as a very positive change for SNC-Lavalin. Now turning to slide number 20, the main impact from applying IAS 31 under IFRS is on Highway 407. As you might be aware, the Highway 407 investment is accounted under the proportionate consolidation method, which results in SNC-Lavalin having a negative carrying value of $60 million at the end of December 2009, as SNC-Lavalin had to recognize its share of the losses of Highway 407, despite it was a negative carrying value. In general, under the equity method, the carrying value of the investee cannot be negative under both IFRS and Canadian GAAP, unless the investor has incurred legal or constructive obligations or made payments on behalf of its investee. So SNC-Lavalin's investment in Highway 407 will now be accounted under the equity method. It will be nil under IFRS and will remain as such until its carrying value becomes positive, meaning that its cumulative share of net income is higher than the cumulative share of losses and dividends. Therefore, SNC-Lavalin will not recognize its share of the Highway 407 net income or loss until the carrying value of its investment becomes positive, and SNC-Lavalin will recognize its dividends earned from Highway 407 in its statement of income under the ICI revenues line, once again, until the carrying value of its investment becomes positive. On slide 21, we're providing some numbers to better quantify the impact. So you can see on the first column, which is under Canadian GAAP, this is SNC-Lavalin's proportionate share of assets and liabilities of Highway 407 as of January 1st, 2010. So you can see that on the consolidated financial statements of SNC-Lavalin, the main impact were on the property and equipment and non-recourse long-term debt accounts. Under IFRS, SNC-Lavalin is no longer taking its share of these assets and liabilities, and as explained the previous slide, the investment is at zero, so that there's no balance sheet items from Highway 407 or SNC-Lavalin. The same concept applies for its income statement. So on slide 22, we're providing the same similar information, but that time it's for the statement of income. So SNC-Lavalin used to recognize its share of revenues and expense of Highway 407 under Canadian GAAP. So this example is provided for the first quarter of 2010. And in that illustration, the only item remaining for IFRS is the dividend from Highway 407, which represented $9.2 million. This represents a difference of approximately $7 million when we compare Canadian GAAP and IFRS, and that's the main difference on SNC-Lavalin's consolidated net income before non-controlling interest upon its transition to IFRS. Now turning to slide number 23 and looking at other impacts on SNC-Lavalin's equity. Non-controlling interest will now be presented within equity under IFRS instead of between liabilities and shareholders' equity under Canadian GAAP. This results in $80 million reclassification as of January 1st, 2010. And this is also illustrated in the table on slide number 23, whereby under Canadian GAAP, we needed to deduct the non-controlling interest to get to the amount of shareholders' equity, whereby under IFRS, there's no need to do such deduction as the total equity includes the non-controlling interest. On slide number 24, we can see that the net income will now be composed of the following items. First, the net income that is attributable to the shareholders of the company, and the net income that is attributable to non-controlling interest. Under Canadian GAAP, the net income attributable to non-controlling interest were not part of net income. However, it should be noted that the EPS calculation remains unchanged under IFRS as it is based on net income attributable to shareholders of the company, which is already excluding non-controlling interest. Now going to slide number 25 for the other impacts on SNC-Lavalin's equity. Under IFRS, all available for sale securities are measured at fair value unless fair value is not reliably determinable. Other Canadian GAAP, the available for sale equity securities that are not traded on an active market were measured at cost. The effect of this change is an increase to S&C-Lavalin's equity of approximately $50 million as of January 1st, 2010, and it mainly relates to its investment in TrendCap, which was disposed of at the end of 2010. As per IFRS 1, which is the first-time adoption of International Financial Reporting Standards, SNC-Lavalin elected to record the balance of its unamortized net actuarial losses relating to its defined benefit plan and post-retirement benefit plan in its opening retained earnings as of January 1st, 2010. As a result, there was a decrease of SNC-Lavalin's equity of approximately $11 million. Now going to slide number 26 to look at the main impacts on SNC-Lavalin's balance sheet presentation. The main impacts are coming from IFRIC 12. As you can see, there will be a decrease of property and equipment and an increase of financial assets, and this is due to the fact that one of our investment, which now qualifies under IFRIC 12, was accounted for as an item of property and equipment in the past, and this is the Okanagan Lake Bridge. So this would be the main impact from IFRIC 12 on the balance sheet presentation. In regards to IS 31 on joint ventures, all accounts will be impacted, and that's mainly coming from IWER 407. So as we saw in one of the previous slides, there will be impact on property and equipment, but also on the concession right, which is an intangible asset, and there will be the decrease of non-recourse long-term debt. So all these items will be removed from SNC-Lavalin's balance sheet. There are other reclassifications. One of them is that the deferred tax assets and liabilities cannot be presented as current assets or liabilities under IFRS. Therefore, for SNC-Lavalin, there would be a decrease of current assets and an increase of non-current assets from that reclassification. Another reclassification impact comes from the financial statements of AltaLink. It relates to the customer contribution. So under certain circumstances, AltaLink receives cash contribution from customers to build certain long-lived assets. Under Canadian GAAP, AltaLink is accounting for these cash contributions as a reduction of property and equipment. Under IFRS, these cash contributions need to be presented as part of deferred revenues. So there will be an increase of both property and equipment and deferred revenues as of the transition date. The other item is to show that there will be an additional line on the balance sheet of SNC-Lavalin, which is the line called provision. It's part of the liabilities, and this is to present the liabilities for which there is uncertainty over timing and amount to be paid. And if we look at SNC-Lavalin's balance sheet, one of them comes from AltaLink. It's the asset retirement obligation. So the provision for asset retirement obligation is recognized by AltaLink as part of a liability representing the present value of the costs related to the retirement of certain long-lived assets. So this item will be removed from our account non-current liabilities and put into the provision, which is the new line on our balance sheet. The last reclassification, the non-controlling interest, as we saw before, this will be now part of equity. Now going to slide number 27 on our 2011 SNC-Lavalin's revenue backlog. The revenue backlog is a non-GAAP and a non-IFRS measure. In 2011, SNC-Lavalin will stop disclosing the infrastructure concession investments revenue backlog, notably due to the impact of IFRIC 12 and IS 31 on these investments. The comparative figures will be adjusted accordingly. We will continue to disclose the services, packages, and O&M revenue backlog. Now to conclude on slide number 28, you've seen that the main impacts on SNC-Lavalin's consolidated financial statements upon transition to IFRS were service concession arrangements and 20 control entities, which both relate to ICI, and there's also the reclassification of non-controlling interest within equity. And as we've seen, there's no significant change expected for services, packages, and O&M activities. And now we're getting ready for 2011 IFRS financial statements, and we can now open up the line for questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone that in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Sarah O'Brien with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Just to confirm, so on the engineering and construction core earnings, there's no expected material difference from IFRS at this point?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you talk about any sort of IFRS pronouncements that maybe are not finalized at this point, like revenue recognition, anything that you can talk to us about that, again, hasn't been finalized but may have an impact as we go forward with IFRS, you know, 2011 and 12?
Well, yeah, there are, in fact, many IFRS standards that are being either at the stage of exposure draft or in the plans of the ISB to be published. We've taken a look at revenue recognition. This is the one that you mentioned, and that's one that we took a close look at. We actually commented on the exposure draft, and we're waiting to see how things will go. We've seen that there were also many respondents to these exposure drafts, but I guess there are many projects that are being conducted by the ASB, and which is the one that is publishing the IFRS standards. But as we speak, we do not foresee any new standards that will affect the numbers that, or what we presented today, or that will change our numbers for January 1st, 2010.
Okay, great. And then just maybe a small technicality, but on slide 9, I just wondered if you could go through the detail of what constitutes the difference of service concession arrangements, the $37
million? Well, this is the difference between IFRIC 12 and what we used to do under Canadian GAAP. So maybe I can provide you with an example just to illustrate what...
Yeah, sort of like which concession arrangements it relates to.
Yeah, well, if you look at our list of concession arrangements that we've provided on slide 13, these are the concession arrangements. You can see that those that were there at January 1st, 2010 are in Transit BC, Okanagan Lake concession, and TC Dome. And so the impact is related to the difference between our Canadian treatment for these ICIs and the treatment under IFRIC 12.
So as maybe just to try to put some color to that, additional color, I would say, if you take Okanagan Lake Bridge as an example, in the past, we would have depreciated the asset as a matter of example and in virtue of the Canadian GAAP, and we would have recorded the revenue according to what the clients would be paying us per year. In virtue of IFRIC 12 for Okanagan Lake Bridge, like Marc-André stated before, we will have capitalized a financial asset, and that financial asset will have been built basically from the construction of it and also the O&M cost of it that will have increased. And we will consider an effective interest rate on that will be considered as financial income, and we'll have a debt to reduce that. But you can see the methodology, apart from the financial debt, is quite different than the methodology under the Canadian GAAP. And I think what Marc-André tries to illustrate, it's within the one that we indicated on page 13. There is where, if you compare one method to the other, comes to a difference of increasing the equity of 4SNC-11 of $37
million. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Pierre Lacroix with Desjardins Securities. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks. Just wondered, in the context of new acquisitions that you will do in the future, if there's major changes from the previous accounting standards.
Well, there is The standard on business combination is slightly different under IFRS than under Canadian GAAP. One of the main difference is when there is an acquisition of less than 100% of the interest in these acquisition, and that relates to the accounting for the minority interest or non-controlling interest. So that's a potential difference. And the other difference is that under Canadian GAAP, you can include your acquisition costs as part of the purchase price allocation, meaning that it's capitalized as part of your goodwill, whereby under IFRS, these costs are to be expensed as incurred. So these are two items that I guess could be differences under between Canadian GAAP and IFRS.
Okay, then it means, you know, if you assume that you have a 100% acquisition, the difference is not material in essence, right? It's just the cost of the acquisitions that will be expensed.
Correct. That's correct, Captain.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Frédéric Bastien with Raymond James. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm just wondering, of all your ICIs, is the 407 the only one you consider as a, or is in, is known as a joint venture?
If we look at, we have many other joint venture into our ICI. The only thing is that if we go one by one, on page, take the example of Chinook. Chinook is a joint venture, and the In-Transit BC is as well, and the QSIM is as well, so we have many others that are considered to be under a joint venture.
Okay, but if I look at page, what was it, the way the 407 is going to be effectively restated on the balance sheet, it's the only one that where the actual numbers go to zero. Is that correct?
The other one are not in a negative value, because you need to consider there's two things, Frédéric. The impact of the 31 standard, the joint venture, the IIS 31, the interest in joint venture, as twofold. One is passing from proportionate consolidation to equity accounting if you have a negative value. But in all of those investments that we do have, there's only Highway 407 that has a negative value because of its past, whereby it started having accounting losses and paid more dividend than what it was making as accounting income. So not for the other. However,
okay,
in terms of stopping to do the accounting on a line-by-line basis, yes, we'll be stopping doing that and we'll go on an equity basis.
Got it. All right. That's what I missed. Thanks. Just another question. Will you be restating the second, third, fourth quarter of 2010, or will we see that as you progressively report those quarters this year?
Well, when we will publish our second quarter of 2011, the comparative figures will be restated for 2010. However, there is an obligation for the MD&A that we're publishing to include in this MD&A the past eight quarters. So that's a regulatory requirement. So when we publish our first quarter of 2011 MD&A, you will have the last eight quarters, including all the quarters of 2010. It should be noted, however, that for 2009, these numbers will not be restated for IFRS. So there will be some Canadian GAAP numbers still in our MD&A for Q1 2011, but the 2010 will be there. The requirement is not to present the full set of financial statements for the quarters in the MD&A, but only specific line items such as revenues, net income, and I believe earnings per share.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Paul Lechem with CIBC. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Can we just go back to the 407 again and this issue about whether the carrying value becomes positive? So up until that point, you don't recognize any income or loss from the 407, and you have no balance sheet accounting for it. But when it becomes, if as and when it becomes positive, do those two items change?
We will recognize income starting, for example, in 2011 from Highway 407, but the income we'll recognize will be based on the dividend he'll pay.
If the carrying value becomes positive for the 407, will that change?
If the carrying value, it will change. Then it won't be based on the dividend. It will be based on our share of the net income of 407.
So how you currently account for it?
Correct. Meaning that we cannot be in a position to have a negative value for 407. It makes, you know, no sense, and we always complain about that under current Canadian GAAP practice, because we don't have any liability. Right now we're carrying $60 million, and it's not the liability we have on 407. And in that regards, in the future, as long as, for example, the dividend be higher than the net income, it will remain having, if I could say, a negative book value in a way. And if you look to the results of for 9 months of 407, the dividend were higher than the net income.
Yeah, and if the but if the carrying value were to become positive, would you then record a balance sheet item for the 407?
For sure, we will record that value at that time. Absolutely.
All right. Can you talk me through AltaLink? Is there any impact change on the AltaLink accounting under IFRS?
Well, there's been a lot of discussions in Canada and in at the international level on rate regulated entities. You know, it's been there's been exposure drafts and other discussions. Right now, under Canadian GAAP, there are specific guidance for rate regulated entities that are applicable to AltaLink. There's no similar GAAP or similar IFRS. So what the AltaLink needs to do is to determine its accounting without the specific guidance under Canadian GAAP. So what needs to be done at that point is to look at IFRS and the principles under IFRS and applying judgment and determine how to account for its activities. So as we mentioned in our third quarter 2010 MD&A, there's still uncertainties on the outcome for the accounting for AltaLink, and they've also mentioned that in their MD&A. You know, we didn't include any adjustment for that in our numbers.
So you'll continue to recognize your proportionate share of their income in your financial statements going forward until there's an IFRS standard for rate-regulated utilities. Is that correct?
Not correct completely, because like explained today, first, we don't right now proportionate account. We fully consolidate as we do have the control.
Okay.
That's for one. And secondly, AltaLink, you know, subject to new regulation in virtue of IFRS, the way they've been accounting under Canadian GAAP will carry on the way, basically the way they've been doing. So it may have an impact once there is new standards for rate-regulated business under IFRS, but we not even think it will have. But that is to be seen with their upcoming new standards.
Okay. Thank you. I'll leave it there.
Your next question comes from the line of Hamza Mazari with Credit Suisse. Your line is open.
Thank you. Most of my questions have been answered, just two clarifications. The first one, are you guys going to be disclosing anything else if you're not disclosing the ICI revenue backlog? Are you going to provide any color there?
in a sense, that will carry on, as Marc-André pointed out, disclosing the backlog for services package and O&M, but with regards to providing a 5 years type of mixed bag, because that's one of the reasons with, for example, our two biggest investment under ICI being 407 and AltaLink. 407 is no longer accounted under proportionate consolidation, so it's going to be a per dividend will record the profit. So it, because of that, of that change, and you know, it was kind of a mixed bag. We felt that we would not disclose any more backlog for ICI. Will we disclose other information? Nothing that we had in mind that would substitute that. No.
Okay, and then just last question. You know, you guys in some of your slide decks show a peer group comparison. Just curious, when you, with these new accounting standards, when you back out the ICI, net, it seems like your PE is going to look more expensive relative to your peer group because the income from Highway 407 is higher because of their dividend. Is that fair, or am I missing something?
I don't know if I understood completely your question by saying when you said excluding ICI, and then could you rephrase it, because I'm not sure if I understand completely.
Yeah, so if you look at your earnings slide deck, you provide a slide called peer group comparison where you show your PE relative to your peer group, Foster, Wheeler, Fleur, etc., and you adjust that for ICI. Because the other companies do not have ICI, and I'm just wondering whether there'll be any how that looks like with IFRS going forward.
I think there'll be no changes, because as we were excluding the ICI, and as pointed out by Marc-André, that you know the changes to IFRS to with us is mainly on ICI, as ICI were excluded. And it, we were, on the PE calculation, we were excluding into the value, or into the price, if I could say, the value of our ICI, which had nothing to do, if I could say, based on our accounting, was much more on discounted cash flow. So in that regard, the earnings, which will not include the ICI, so it won't be any changes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Sarah O'Brien with RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Hi. Jill, can you just, I know you said for AltaLink there won't be a change in the accounting right now, but just as a point of sort of segregating, if we want, some revenues that SNC derives from AltaLink, could you give us an order of magnitude of how important it could be should the IFRS rules change?
When you say should, we don't think, if it change, it won't change the revenue as such, so we don't foresee to have any changes.
Okay, I just wondered if the revenue, the service revenue that you realize from servicing AltaLink, if that could change under different IFRS rules as they become more clear over time.
No, it won't make any differences. Right now, the way we're accounting, it's a bit, you know, we're accounting and it's under, mainly it's under package that it's recorded under between, let's say, SNC-Lavalin T&D Group and AltaLink, and that won't be any, there won't be any changes to that in the future, so it will be reported as package, and there won't be increase or decrease to that figure. And with regards to the elimination of profit, it was not eliminated as we had disclosed in our notes to financial statements, and in the future under Canadian GAAP, and it will neither be eliminated in the future under IFRS.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Pierre Lacroix with Desjardins Securities. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks. Just a small precision. Can you give me an example how the carrying value of the 407 would become positive going forward?
So let's say, and I'll take the example of at 100% as an example. Mm-hmm. Or let's say at our proportionate share, it'll be easier. Just if, let's say we receive 200 million, no, 407 makes 200 million of profit next year, the equivalent of 17%. And I just figured that makes no sense, but just for illustration purposes, okay? Mm-hmm. So our share is 200 million. Let's say it paid to us 100 million of dividend. So therefore, there's an accretion in our book value of 100 million. The difference between the 200 less what was paid of 100 million. You compare that to the already 60 million that we had as a negative, that results in a book value of 40 million. So then we would record the 40 million in our balance sheet, and it would be added to our profit and loss as well.
Okay, basically you need profit to be higher than the dividend, right?
Correct, and higher than the cumulative effect of the negative value of 60 million, the combination of the two.
Okay. Okay. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you. So,
no, for, go ahead.
So I think as you were mentioning, without any further questions, I think we try to attempt to help the investors and also our analysts to prepare for the upcoming changes that we'll encounter in the first quarter. And we hope that this presentation was useful. If there is any question, I know Denis is available to answer to those accounting differences, and certainly the team has worked extremely hard. It looks sometimes easy when we're saying there's no differences under the engineering, construction, or operation and maintenance, but the team has worked extremely hard to make this transition, and we're proud of what we've done, and we try to make it as easy as possible to explain today. Hopefully it was useful to all of you, and we appreciate your attention. Thank you once again. Talk to you on first quarter, our year-end results, and our upcoming conference. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.